Well, we've come to our last storyteller for the evening, and it's Tracy Wahl, and she's a producer at NPR's Weekend All Things Considered. She does karate. Sorry, taekwondo. Well, same thing. And she's obsessed with Flickr, so she's probably taken about 6 pictures of each of you tonight already. Look for them on her site tomorrow. Anyway, please welcome Tracy Wahl.
Hi there. It's very dark back there. I can't see anyone except this front row, which is probably okay. This story is about how you should be careful who you talk to at the Y. And this isn't going where you think it is. It's really about teachers and how you meet them in really unexpected places. And one minute you're just sort of going about your general routine, and the next minute your life is changed in some incredibly dramatic way. I'm going to talk really fast because I was really long at the beginning, so I'm sorry about that. So I go to the Y, I'm taking taekwondo, I go at the same time every night, and I start to notice this woman who's wearing goggles, a little swimsuit, she's maybe 80 years old, she's tiny, and she just sits there on the couch watching the news when I go in. And one day I sat down next to her and she started talking to me. And you have to sort of picture this, I'm in this white outfit with a little belt on, and she's in her swimsuit and these goggles, and she's like railing against George Bush, which I thought was kind of cool. And so we started having this conversation, and within like 2 seconds of us talking, I suddenly started to get that feeling that you get from some people where you're kind of tingly and calm all at the same time, and you just want to know them. And so I just sat there and talked to her, and about 10 minutes later, she said, "Do you want to go to the Philosophical Society with me on Friday night?" And I had no idea what the Philosophical Society was. I just met this woman, and I said, "Yes." So I go to pick her up at her apartment, and I walk up to the front door, and she comes out, and she's wearing this incredibly wonderful outfit, bright colors, big hat. Remember, she's 80. And I couldn't really tell whether she looked like a crazy person or an artist. I just knew that, like, this was this very unique-looking woman. So we get in the car, we go to the Cosmo Club, which those of you who know D.C. know that this is one of the snootiest places in all of Washington. It's full of, like, really old guys in suits. And the Philosophical Society, it turns out, is a group of old, mostly men, mostly white men, who sit around talking about science and humanism and this kind of thing. So we go in, and there's a physicist talking about, I don't even remember what it was, but Alita was like grabbing me by the hand, practically holding my hand, and taking me up to people and introducing me to them, and saying, you know, you have to meet this person, tell her your story. And these men, mostly men, are looking at her like, you're totally crazy. And she keeps doing this over and over again, and they're looking at us like we're both totally nuts. And as we leave, she says to me, you know, they don't realize that if they don't talk to you, if they don't tell you about their lives, their stories will die with them. Okay, fast forward several months later. I get this call from Alita, and I go by her apartment just to see how she's doing. And she's not answering the door, and I'm kind of freaked out, because by this time, she and I have been to a few of these Philosophical Society meetings together. And I'm kind of like really starting to be concerned about her and care about her. She's not there. She had mentioned a husband at some point named George. I get really worried. I kind of freak out. Where's Alita? Where's Alita? I call George. Turns out they don't live together. Turns out they haven't lived together for 30 years. They have been divorced for a long time. But he says, oh, she's fine. Don't worry. She went to Pennsylvania. Okay, great. And I said, George, you know, she's been telling me all about you. She wants us to have lunch. Do you want to have lunch? So I go have lunch with George. He's like 90. Okay. So we're having lunch in, you know, DuPont Circle, and turns out he's a career diplomat, 50 years in the State Department, and, you know, it was Alita's main desire to get us to know each other, and I wasn't sure why at the time, and he's talking about having met Kim Dae-jung and all of these things, and, you know, Italy in the 50s, and I'm having a hard time following it because he's partly got a little bit of Alzheimer's, but he also just knows a lot, and so anyway, I went home. A couple months later, I get a call from Alita. George has died. She's like, I need you, Tracy. I need you to come to the funeral. My husband and I go to the funeral. 7 people at the funeral. Remember, he was 90 years old. When you get that old, not a lot of your friends are still alive. And it's really sad because, you know, here's this guy, 50 years in the foreign, in the State Department, 7 people at the funeral. We're sitting there, Alita's grabbing my hands, still. And out from the back comes up this very distinguished-looking gentleman. And he says, you know, if it hadn't been for George Lister, thousands of people would have died. Thousands of people would have been tortured. Turns out he was the head of, he was the first human rights officer at the State Department, pushed to make human rights a part of U.S. foreign policy. And this person was Tom Harkin. Tom Harkin had flown all the way from Iowa just to be at this funeral. Okay. Act 4 or 5. I get this call a couple months later. It's Alita. She says, we have to clean out George's apartment. I said, we? She said, yes. I need your help. Please come over and help me clean out George's apartment. Turned out they had had separate apartments all these years. They stayed good friends. I walk in the door, and there is 50 years worth of papers on the floor, strewn everywhere, books everywhere. Open the closet. There are literally 50 white shirts starched with holes in the elbows. The man never threw away a thing. And for the next, I don't even know, 5 months, one bag at a time, we moved all of George's stuff into Alita's apartment. Why did we not hire a moving truck? Why were we doing this one bag at a time? I don't know. Why did I do it? I don't know. But by the time we were finished, we had Alita's tiny little apartment on Massachusetts Avenue full of 50 years worth of George's life. Now about this time, Alita started to not do so well. She would forget things. She seemed to be kind of making stuff up. I was afraid she was starting to show signs of Alzheimer's. I didn't really know what to do. I had never met any of her family, never heard her mention any family. And she said, Tracy, you have to help me find out what to do with all these papers. You have to help me preserve George's life. And I just felt this incredible weight on my shoulders. I mean, how do I help her with all these papers? So I start making phone calls, randomly making phone calls to people, Alita's from Texas. I called the University of Texas. He was in human rights. I called this woman at the University of Texas law school. I said, I've got all these papers. Can you help me do anything with them? She said, yes. In fact, I can. We can get, like, she ended up getting thousands of dollars in grant money. They're doing a huge conference. I went to Alita. I said, we found a place for the papers. Remember, this had been months and months and months of trying to find a place for these papers, and Alita's slowly losing her mind. Excuse me, I'm sorry. She said, you know, I really wanted my family to have those papers. I said, Alita, you don't have any family. She said, my family wanted those papers. Well, it turned out there was some family. There was a niece who did then show up. They didn't want the papers. We had to basically lie to Alita to convince her to move to Texas where someone could take care of her. I was getting up early in the morning, having breakfast with her, having lunch with her, doing everything I could to take care of her, trying to keep some sense of sanity in her life. Sometimes we'd be sitting at the breakfast table and she'd look out the window and she'd say, it was snowing one day, and she said, see the way the geometric shape of that snowflake? It's like poetry. And I'm like, that's Alita why I went with you to the Philosophical Society, because you see snowflakes like that. She moved to Texas. I participated in this lie to get her to move there. I kept trying to call her. She has less and less awareness of what day it is, what time it is. I started sending her books. And I sent her a book not too long ago about birds, because she, even though she can't really remember anything anymore and she doesn't really have a good grasp on reality, she loves to sit in the backyard and whistle to the birds. So I always ask her how the birds are when I talk to her. And her niece called me and said, you know, Tracy, you please don't send those books anymore. And I asked her why. And she said, because Alita is starting to say that the birds of death are coming for her. And I said, well, maybe they are.